We are recording this on Wednesday. It is hours after this Trevor Zegras pass to Sonny Milano. And Sean Rourke, my co-host, Sean, I can't get enough of this play, the lacrosse style pass. I love the innovation. I love the skill. I want to see more of this type of play in the National Hockey League. I love the fact that Trevor Zegras had the guts to try it and that it connected, the alley-oop pass.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I mean, it's the evolution, right? It's the lacrosse goal into the lacrosse pass. And if you love it, you're going to see more of it. It's a copycat league. Every skill player in the NHL is watching that clip in their hotel rooms last night or in the locker room this morning. And they're all going to go out for practice or the morning skates. And if we talk to our correspondents across the league, I bet you'd find 15 guys trying some variation of that today. But the best part, as skilled as it was, you know how great it was when you watch Milano and Zegras get to the bench and just their reaction. They were like two mites sitting on the bench talking about one of them scoring their first goal. They were laughing. Zegras hid his face like he was ashamed of what he did. It was so audacious. It's brilliant.
Years ago, he would have been pummeled for trying to play like that. That's how far I think we've come in the National Hockey League, that play is celebrated, not, you know, viciously attacked, shall we say, right? I mean, that's the type of play we want to see more of. And I agree with you. As soon as we start, I think it was Svechnikov, right? Andrei Svechnikov started to see more of the, you know, he scored on the lacrosse style goal. I won't call it the Michigan, by the way. I don't like that nickname. I think it's a weird nickname to call a goal the Michigan. But anyway, it was a lacrosse style goal. He scored it and we started to see more guys try it. And even just a couple of weeks ago, we saw Chris Kreider even try it in a game with the New York Rangers. He didn't connect, he didn't score, but just to have the guts to try those types of plays, I love it. You're right. I think we're going to see more of this. I think guys practice this more than we know of. They look to work on things. At the end of a practice, when you see guys tooling around and trying different things, they're trying things like this just to see if they can do it, just to see if it'll work. And then obviously everything's got to be right. The timing's got to be right. The situation's got to be perfect to try it in a game. But just to have the instincts to try it in a game, to me, blows me away. And that's what we're seeing from all these young guys coming into the league the last 5-10 years. They're coming into the league with the confidence, the bravado, but just tremendous hockey instincts of understanding time and place in game, Sean. And I think that's one thing we saw with Trevor Zegras, and we're seeing it with so many other guys too.
Well, first of all, you better not let your colleague, Nick Kostanica, who you're going to spend a lot of time with this week, know that you won't call it the Michigan. He may pummel you. But the other thing that people never talk about with the lacrosse goal, and if you want to talk about this pass, is they've become a necessity. Goalies are so good at doing certain things now, and with VH and reverse VH, the wraparound is almost extinct, right? There's nothing on the ice anymore. The goalie moves on his knees from side to side, taking away all those low goals around the net. So again, it's evolution. You look at a goalie and you try and identify his weaknesses. And where's he weak behind the net, around the net? He's weak up around his shoulders because he's now dropped down and left the top of the net and said, if you can pick that hole, God bless you, you can have a goal. And where's your stick in a lacrosse goal? It's at the crossbar where all the open net is. So, you know, everybody's like, oh, it you're seeing it more and more. People are doing it. They're doing it because it's an effective weapon to attack goalies who have figured out how to take away the things that players used to do.
And that's part of what I mean about the instincts and the intelligence that they have in the game, right? I mean, is that the players are figuring these things out. I mean, maybe coaching is helping them in that sense as well, but they're figuring out those things and they're finding different ways to score. And that play last night with Sonny Milano and Trevor Zegras. Also, let's give some credit to Sonny Milano for keeping a stick below the bar there, right? I mean, that's not an easy thing to do. You're probably jumpy when you see that puck a little bit, but he has to have the patience that wait that extra tick and then bat it in. And the celebration was great. Like Trevor Zegras, I think it was Sonny Milano said that Zegras didn't even say anything when they went in the celebration, just simply because he was lost for words that it actually worked. So I want to see more of it. No question about it. So anyway, Sean, you do have a sit down interview a little bit later. We'll get to it. You were able to catch up with Keith Jones, does suffer TNT and a lot on the flyer. So we'll hear from that a little bit later, but first let's go. We had coaching changes. We had a lot of changes since we last chatted in this podcast, but let's hit Vancouver first, since we'll hit a lot with the Flyers. with Keith Jones, and you'll hit a lot with that. Vancouver, big time changes made. Bruce Boudreau is now the new coach. And Sean, I think this is the perfect spot for Boudreau and what he brings to the team. I think we already saw it in one game, 4-0 win. It's just, he lightens the mood. And I think the Canucks were a team that has, that was so tense and squeezing the stick so hard. You know, Brock Besser hadn't scored in forever. Pedersen's off to a bad start. I mean, the team can't win. And Boudreau comes in and he's just going to lighten the mood. You see the Boudreau bump from the previous teams that he's coached. You know, Washington, there was a bump. Anaheim, there was a bump. And same with Minnesota. And I think we're going to see that with Vancouver as well. And I think we already started to see that. It's just, there's a talented team here. And he, they just needed a little bit of a lighter approach, I think.
I don't know that I agree with that. I don't know that Bruce Boudreau lightens the mood. He's a pretty intense guy, right? He's going to drive these guys. He's going to force Vancouver to play in a way that it didn't want to play this year, right? They're going to be more physical. They're going to be harder on the puck. Like, you think, especially in the West, like when Bruce was with Anaheim, those games, they were demolition derbies. Like, he doesn't, there's nothing light about Bruce Boudreau other than his personality, right? He'll make you laugh. He's kind of fun with the media, but I don't think his teams are like, oh, he's a lighthearted guy. I mean, you've seen in the road to the Winter Classic and all the other behind the scenes stuff, you've seen some of his outbursts in the locker room. You know, when he got hired, they played the one, I think it was when he was in Washington and Ovi was young, and he basically came in the room and told them that they were, you know, they had no confidence. One bad thing happened and they got down, and I'm giving you the G-rated version. Mm-hmm. The actual version was close to NC-17, if not X, with all the profanity that was in it. So I think he's actually going to bring an intensity to them. And the other thing that I liked from the first game was he kind of reassigned some jobs, right? You looked out there and Hughes and Pedersen are on the PK. Pedersen's never played on the PK in the whole time he's been in Vancouver. And Hughes mentioned it after the game. He's like, I think this is really going to help Petey. I think the more responsibility you give that kid, the more he's going to respond. I think he needed somebody to say, I believe in you. And not in the press, because Travis Green said it all along. He's a good player. I believe in him. You have to believe in him on the ice. You have to back up your words and you have to say, I do believe in you. And here's why I believe in you. I'm going to put you out in all these important positions, even though you're struggling. And who knows how long it lasts with Bruce, but I think he sent a really important message by doing that in game one.
One of the things, what I mean by Boudreau being lighten the mood, lighten the load, is that personality, right? That he has. And that's what he can bring to a team. He is an intense guy. He's an intense hockey guy. There's no question about it. And he demands a lot from his teams, and he's going to demand a lot from this Canucks team. But where the demands are in playing up to your potential and maybe beyond it, giving, like you talked about, giving assignments that you hadn't had before because he believes you can do it. I think showing that belief in Pedersen and showing that belief in Hughes in game one is huge because it buys them in. Guys want to play, right? That's the thing. People don't understand, like, when guys aren't on the penalty kill, they want to be on the penalty kill. They want to be on the ice as much as they can be. They want that challenge, especially guys who are supposed to be stars in this league, like Pedersen, like Hughes. They want the extra responsibility. If they weren't getting it before, now they're going to get it from Bruce Boudreau. And the thing that he's going to make his teams do, and every one of his teams have done it, is they're going to attack. They're going to be in your face. They're going to push. And as a result of that, they're going to maybe have some risk in their game, but not a ton, because he's also going to ask them to come back and the forwards to come back as hard as they can. If you look at the way his teams have trended in the previous three stops, each one of those teams, the two that he took over midseason, Washington and Anaheim, I know it's a number of years ago, each one of those teams improved drastically defensively. They're cut down on their goals against, and their goals for per game went up because they attacked and they had the puck a lot more. And guys who wanted the responsibility were given the responsibility. There was, when he took over, Alex Ovechkin was like, Alex, go. Like, do your thing. Nikki Backstrom, go. Do your thing, but don't suffer on the D, right? You got to attack. You got to move. And he's going to do the same here with Pedersen, with Hughes, with Besser, with Horvat, and these guys. And I think it's just going to free him up. It's going to open them up to play a more complete and more energetic game than we've been seeing from them.
Yeah, for sure. And you know what I kind of found to be the most amazing thing of this whole change was, you know, afterwards the owner spoke. I can't remember the last time he spoke. I think it was when Trevor Linden left as the president, and that was a long time ago. And, you know, he kind of fell on the sword and said, I waited too long. Like I was kind of lulled by a lot of close games and you know, I waited too long to do this. And that's a stunning public admission. And then, you know, Stan Smeal, and he says, hey, we did wait too long and this room's broken and we need to fix it. Like, he's the interim GM, but to me, he set the tone on day one. And he's a guy that, you know, if you're looking for a GM, that guy bleeds several colors because of all the different colors of Vancouver's worn throughout his career. Like, it's like a rainbow of blood that would come out of him, and it did during his NHL career. But he's all about the Vancouver Canucks, and I thought he really set the tone right there on day one and kind of talking about the change and the responsibility that these players have to represent the city of Vancouver.
I think it all looks good right now, and that's why another reason why I think Boudreau is the right guy here, because short term, he's the guy who in history has gotten a lot out of his teams very quickly. And that's what this team needs. And I don't think they're done, John. Like, I look at the standings and I know where they are, but I look at the Pacific Division and I say, why not Vancouver, right? Their goaltending is quality. They've got guys who can put the puck in the net. They've got a coach who's going to free them up now. Maybe a little bit deficient on the back end, but we'll see. Maybe they can make up for that, have the forwards coming back. And I look at it and I say, I'm starting to believe more in Anaheim. Do I really believe in LA? Do I really believe in San Jose? Seattle had a nice run, but there's an opportunity here for the Vancouver Canucks with several home games in a row now too, to put a string together. And we might be looking too far ahead. I might be, you know, a little too rosy about this. It's possible. I mean, because this team was really struggling under Travis Green and, you know, okay, they won one game. I get all that, but I think there's an opportunity for Vancouver here. I don't think that they are as done, say, as I would say the Philadelphia Flyers are right now.
Dude, I need you as a teacher, because your curve as a teacher must be amazing.
Let's talk in a week or two. Maybe I'm dead wrong. All right. It's very possible I'm dead wrong, but I'm starting. I like the change here. I think Bruce Boudreau can get a lot out of this team. Look, I had the Vancouver Canucks as a playoff team before the season started. They've been probably, in my estimation, next to the New York Islanders, the most disappointing team in the league. But they have a chance to change that now. And they have pieces that can change that. Can they get themselves back in the race? I do believe that they can get themselves back in the race. Yes.
And I believe I want you to do my review next year.
Well, I get very hard when it gets personal. That's the problem. Yeah. All right, let's do Flyers real fast. But yeah, we do have the Keith Jones, your interview with Keith Jones. But Sean, I mean, as I was saying, the Flyers, they make the change. Alain Vigneault and Michel Therrien are out. Mike Yeo stays on the bench. Is he there for the full time this season? We don't know. And I addressed this in my mailbag too. The Flyers, to me, are a team that's in the worst spot to be in right now. Veteran players who are underperforming, a capped out team with veteran players who are underperforming, middle of the pack at best at this point. And their defensive zone coverage is just abysmal, the way they play defense right now. The holes all over the ice. They scored 5 against Colorado Avalanche and they lost by 2 goals. I don't know what the Philadelphia Flyers' next move is. And that's what I said in my mailbag too. I just don't know, because do you go into do you say blow it up? Let's go into a rebuild. That's hard to do. Do they have the pieces in place to make a push forward to try to be contenders? I'm not seeing it. You know, they don't have a great track record for that either. You know, so they're in a terrible spot, and I don't know which way that Chuck Fletcher and this Philadelphia Flyers team is going to go.
Well, he's got to go all in. I mean, that's why he made the coaching change. He believes in the Flyers. You know, he said that he thinks that this team is more the team of the first 10 games than they were the second 10 games. And then this week was going to be the barometer. And the Flyers crashed and burned completely. And you know, pretty much, I thought that Colorado game was kind of a statement game, right? Like, something needs to happen. Like, that was the players basically saying, fix this. But yeah, he needs more out of a lot of people. And he needs Ryan Ellis back is one of the things he needs. Look, their defense isn't great, but it's considerably worse when Ryan Ellis isn't involved in it. So, you know, I don't know. The injuries have been kind to them. I would say they're as disappointing as Vancouver, not as disappointing as the Islanders, but pretty disappointing. I thought they were going to be a better team than this. And now we see if, you know, you talked about the Bruce Boudreau jump. Now we see if Mike Yeo can do the same thing. And he's been known to do that as well. Certainly didn't start out as rosy as Bruce's did. Nobody in Philadelphia was chanting for Mike Yeo like they were for Bruce Boudreau the other night. So there's a lot of work to be done there.
That's the thing. I agree that if you're going to go in one direction, he's got to go all in. That's what he was doing in the offseason. That's why he got Ryan Ellis. It's when he, you know, got Rasmus Ristolainen. And, you know, yeah, you got to go all in, but I don't believe in the core pieces that they have right now to be able to go all in and make a huge run here and make a big difference. And I'm not so sure I believe, you know, that Mike Yeo is the right guy for it either. Mike Yeo was part of the coaching staff that couldn't turn this thing around, that was really problematic for this team. The thing, I guess the positive you look at is that Mike Yeo was there. So he knows what was wrong with what was going on. He knows where the players were deficient. And that might be areas where he's like, okay, I know where we need to fix, right? Because he was there. Whereas Boudreau obviously wasn't in Vancouver. He was just doing some work for the NHL Network and, you know, watching things from afar. So maybe Mike Yeo has an advantage there, but maybe that's also a disadvantage because there's not a new fresh blood coming in, you know, to this team and a new fresh outlook. It's the guy that was there, you know, it's the guy that they saw every day. And, you know, there's two that are not there anymore, but now the guy is still there. So they're highly disappointing. There are holes all over their defensive zone. And I know you mentioned Ryan Ellis, and yes, Ryan Ellis is a good player, but Ryan Ellis is not Victor Hedman. Ryan Ellis is not, you know, a top five defenseman in the National Hockey League. He's a good defenseman. He is. He makes a difference and they need him back, but I don't know that Ryan Ellis makes up for everything when he does come back either, or enough makes up for enough when he does come back to help this team turn it around as drastically as they need to turn it around from what we've seen lately from the Flyers.
No, I don't know if that's the case either, but it certainly helps and they need all the help they can get right now.
They do. You know who doesn't need any help right now? The Minnesota Wild, the Dallas Stars, and the New York Rangers. As we speak today, Wednesday, we're recording this on Wednesday, all of them have 7-game winning streaks, the Rangers, the Stars, and the Wild. And the thing that impresses me about all three of these teams, Sean, is all have established true home ice advantage too. The Rangers and the Stars have won 8 straight at home. The Wild have won 6 straight at home. The Wild are 10-2-0 at home this season. The Stars are 9-2-1. The Rangers are 8-1-1 at home. They're making home ice advantage matter for them. And all three of these teams are rolling right now. And I think we kind of expected it from the Wild to be a top team. They were a lot, you know, they had that, you know, ability to take that next step. Dallas, once they got guys back, Sagan back in the lineup, all that, I think we kind of expected. We expected the Rangers to have a bump. I don't know if we expected the Rangers to be 17-4-3 at this point in the season, but expecting them to have a bump. But that home ice advantage has made a big difference for all of them because they're winning their home games. You win your home games, you got a shot to go a long way in this league.
Which one do you believe in the most?
Of those three, I think the Wild. I believe the Wild the most. They have a little bit more of a pedigree based off of than the Rangers do at this point. The Stars obviously went to the Stanley Cup final a couple of years ago. But I look at the Wild and I see the depth. I see the defense. I see the excitement that you get from Kaprizov. They've got good line combinations going on, especially with Zuccarello, Hartman, and Kaprizov. So I look at the Wild and I say of the three there, I believe in them the most. But I had to tell you, and you know, I watch the Rangers a lot because I cover them a lot. The way they're playing right now, my belief in them is starting to go up significantly, especially on the power play, because they look like they are their first power play unit is an absolute weapon right now. But of the three there, I would put the Wild as the top of the three of those teams right now. What about you?
Well, first, I'm going to apologize to you, Dan, because I set that up on a tee for you to make your life great. All you had to do was say the New York Rangers.
But I don't believe in them as most as I do. I don't believe the Wild are the team that I look at the most. I believe
in
them.
And their rabid fan base would extol you.
That's all right.
As a hero. You know, we had this conversation last week. We talked a little bit about the Super 16, and I had the Rangers at number 11, the lowest out of all of us. Mm-hmm. And I spent a good couple of days defending my position on Twitter from the Ranger fan base who wanted to know what my hockey pedigree was, if I've ever watched a hockey game in my life. Other things that we probably can't say on this podcast because I had the temerity to rate the Rangers so low, despite the fact, who have they beaten?
Oh, are you going to make me list the teams that they've beaten here?
How many playoff teams have they beaten in the last 3 weeks?
Oh, I can't even remember all the opponents, but you're right.
You can't remember because there aren't any.
I mean, they've beaten the Blackhawks twice, obviously. The Sharks, they beat the Flyers. That's the last four. That's what they've done in this month. They are playing the Avalanche at home on a back-to-back tonight, Wednesday night. So we're obviously recording that and, you know, this before that. And that'll be a significant test, especially if they go back to Alexander Georgiev. But they beat the Bruins at Boston, right?
Boston's out of the playoffs.
You know the pedigree of the Bruins, and you will defend the Bruins more than anybody else on this podcast.
My question was, what teams currently in the playoffs have they beaten?
Let's look here. You got to go back a ways. All right. They beat the Florida Panthers to start a run where they bet, 10 of 11 out of 12, and they almost blew that one, that game. But again, Sean, you're making my point. Like I said, the Wild. I didn't say the Rangers. I said the Wild.
And with all of that said, just in case any of that rabid army is listening to our podcast, I'm going to give a little sneak preview. I moved the Rangers up in my rankings this week. Some of the feedback I got made me think about it more. They're clearly playing better. I'm curious how long their goaltender is going to be out. I'm curious how long their backup is going to be able to hold the fort because he hasn't been good this year. He finished that shutout against San Jose and played decently. He was good against Chicago. His track record this year certainly suggests that he's not a playoff goalie, and they have nothing behind him. When they get to their backup now, it's Huska, who's never played an NHL game. So there's still some concern there for sure.
100% agree with you. They say that Shesterkin should only be a week, so three games. Tonight, Wednesday night against the Avalanche is the third game. We'll see. If we talk next week, we'll see if he's back in the lineup. That injury looked bad, but I'm going to flip this around on you, right? So you say, who have they beaten? 100% reasonable argument, right? They have not beaten the best of the best in the National Hockey League. They haven't, but they're beating the teams on their schedule. They're winning the games that you're supposed to win. Is that not also the sign of a playoff team, of a contending team, the team that goes out and says, you know what? We just beat San Jose on a Friday night. We just beat Chicago on a Saturday night, right? You want to say we're supposed to win those games? Well, then you're saying we're a really good team, because you wouldn't be saying we're supposed to win games if we weren't a really good team. And look at us right now. I'm talking from if I was the Rangers. Look at it. We've won 7 in a row. We've won 11 of 12. You want to argue about the opponents, but we're winning games. We're piling up the points. This is what we're supposed to be doing, is it not?
Yes, it is. And that's fine. But I think anybody worth their salt in looking at the league. Look, if we were doing power rankings on records, we would just copy the standings, right? Either points or point percentage. And that would be a really easy assignment for each of us to do. Like at some point, you have to decide what you're going to value. And to me, the true test of any team is what they do against elite teams. And the Rangers haven't had that opportunity since Calgary, really.
Well, Florida.
So Florida, they almost blew that game, and they got their doors blown off against Calgary. And look, the Rangers are probably a different team now than they were against that Calgary team. But when you look at results against top 10 teams, they don't have a track record yet.
Not
Minnesota yet. Does. Minnesota just went into Edmonton and beat Edmonton, right? And Dallas is beating quality teams in this run that they've had. So that's my only argument.
Again, that's why
and it's a brilliant one.
That's why I said the Wild more. Look, I mean, I think you're right. The Rangers haven't had that opportunity, but they are beating the teams on their schedule. All right.
Say that again, please?
The Rangers haven't had the opportunity, but they're beating the teams on their schedule.
No, the first part. Sean, you're right.
What I said. No, I didn't.
Sean, you're right.
I don't believe I said that. I said it's a quality argument, I believe.
No, you said so. Sean, you're right.
I didn't say Sean, you're right. Those words never come out of my mouth.
We'll have Bob Bender play it back later, our producer.
All right. Well, I want to hear your interview with Keith Jones. So you talk Flyers with him. You talk, go around the league with him. Here is Sean's interview with Keith Jones.
Keith, thanks for joining us. I know you're a busy man, lots going on, especially in Philadelphia. So before we get to that, I got to ask you about the thing that's just, it's the talk of hockey right now. We talked about it at the start of our podcast, the Trevor Zegras, Sonny Milano goal last night. What were your thoughts when you saw it?
It made me smile, I can tell you that. That was some creativity that I had not seen before. So I'm pretty sure that Wayne Gretzky would appreciate that. And that tells you how phenomenal that play was. Really enjoyed watching it. I've enjoyed watching Anaheim this year, so I'm not surprised that it's two of the more creative young players in the game that team up to score an amazing goal that everybody that's loving hockey is going to get a glance at, whether they watched it live last night or look it up today. It's going to be all over the place, and it should be. It was awesome.
So let me ask you, as a player, I'm not going to ask you whether you ever tried that in practice or not, but and it was a different time when you were a player, but when you saw things through highlights or whatever, did the next day everybody kind of go out and try those things? That's what it seems like. It seems like we're going to see more of this as players see it and want to one-up it.
Yeah, it really started with the Michigan play, right? And the one that everybody referenced, right, when they watch this. And I think you saw a bunch of young kids start to practice at home and in their driveway. And, you know, when I was young, it was Gretzky on a 7-up commercial where he would flip the puck 3 times in the air and then swat it. And all of us as kids tried that in practice. That's about as creative as I ever got in my hockey playing career. But that was all based upon a TV commercial that Wayne had done. So it kind of is similar in some ways that these type of plays just all of a sudden become the thing to do. And someone, thousands or kids or hundred thousands of kids are going to start to try similar plays like that. And I'm sure they've been doing them. A lot of the young guys have already, you know, tried it multiple times before it ever comes to fruition in a game situation. But when it does, I think it becomes contagious. And I don't think there's any question that there'll be a lot of youngsters trying it out now.
The other piece of big news in right in your backyard is Philly and all the changes that have happened there. With the change in coaches and the struggles they've had this year, what's the mood now that the changes have been made? Obviously, it sends a message to the team that things weren't good enough. Has kind of the mood changed at all?
You know, the first game for Mike came so quickly. Basically, the Vigneault firing took place in the morning, and Mike Yeo was the head coach leading up to a game that night after a difficult loss the night before. So hard to get a real feel for it. They did score 5 goals in their game against the Avalanche. There's some things that he wants to change as far as their approach goes. I think anytime there's a coaching change, prior to it happening, everybody senses that it's coming as players. Sometimes you work your way out of it. And, you know, if the Flyers win against Tampa that night and all of a sudden you string a win together the next night, that coach may have saved his job and the coaching change would never happen. But there's multiple times in my career where you sensed it, the coaching change happened. Sometimes there's an immediate impact. Sometimes it's, you know, 3 or 4 games down the road. A lot of it depends on your schedule. In this case, for the Flyers, they have the busiest week that they've had, you know, in a long time 5 games in 7 nights, the first one being the game against Tampa, the second one being Mike Yeo's first game, the loss against the Avalanche. I think we'll know as this week moves along, and by the end of the week, I'll have a better feel for what it is as far as the mood of the team. But until they win a game, that mood's going to be awful. And I think we saw last night when the Islanders finally won a game just how refreshed they seemed after the game, even in Barry Trotz's comments. So I would expect something like that to occur if the Flyers can beat the Devils here this evening.
You said there's some things he wants to change, and he's been in this situation before where he's had to get a team to kind of bump right away if they want to save their season. What do you think the biggest thing we're going to see under the new leadership is going to be on the ice?
Yeah, I think he wants them to be more aggressive in the offensive zone. They have not done a very good job of checking the puck back when they've lost possession of it. It actually was a real strength of Alain Vigneault's team going back 2 seasons ago when he started, you know, his Flyers tenure. They were a team that wore the opposition down. They were a team that played better as the periods moved along and were the stronger team for the most part when the games were coming to an end. That hasn't happened since, you know, the COVID shortening took place, the interruption of that season. And at that point, the Flyers were one of the favorites to win the Cup. They were playing remarkably well. They have never got back to that game. So I would suspect that that's what Mike Yeo is talking about. He wants them to play with quickness, but he also wants them to play with more determination. And when that puck is turned over, whether you're the guy that coughed it up or not, he wants you to get it back as quickly as you can. And that's not been a strength of this Flyers team. So that may be one of the major things that we see kind of being pushed by Mike Yeo. He said he wants his students to pay attention in the classroom. So I suspect there'll be a lot of teaching going on through video and through illustration trying to get these guys back on track.
You mentioned they scored 5 goals against Colorado, but they gave up 7. Is this defense salvageable? And is it as simple as that Ryan Ellis hasn't been available but for all but 4 games?
It's killing them, Sean. It's the Matt Niskanen effect all over again. The replacement for Matt Niskanen arrived a year later. They struggled without him last year. One of the strengths of Niskanen's game was that he made Ivan Provorov into a number one defenseman. And most number ones make other players better and allow them to elevate into, you know, a 2 role or a 3. For Provi, he's needed the help of veteran defensemen, and Niskanen gave him great insulation when he was here. Ellis was brought in to do the same and started off like it looked like that was going to be the positive effect the Flyers were looking for. Missing Ellis has been the number one issue for this team, and whether it's Ellis or it's a Niskanen or, you know, you go back to the days of a Kimmo Tiiminen type, that's what they need on this team to kind of place everybody in the proper spot on the back end. Because Ristolainen has played well. Recently, the minuses have been racking up because he's being asked to do too much, much like he was in Buffalo. But he is a nice piece for the back end here, and they need him. So I think if Ellis can return and get healthy, Mike Yeo is going to look like a genius because the team is going to play much better.
Is there a concern at this point about Carter Hart just because of how bad defensively they've been and the fact that he's been kind of left out to dry for more than a year now, just the psychological effect of it?
Yeah, I would say that's a legitimate concern. He had played extremely well for the first, you know, 15 games or so. There was a little blip in the game against Tampa that really started this losing streak. A goal by Stamkos from a difficult angle kind of slid underneath his pad. The game ended up going to overtime in a shootout, and then Tampa scored on 2 consecutive shootout attempts, and it looked rather easy. Besides that, Carter has played extremely well, but the team now, when they started to press to try to get goals, the defensive lapses showed up, and the goaltending numbers, which we all look at, save percentage and goals against, have started to become elevated. So the team needs to get it under control to help their goaltenders out a bit. A 7 spot in the game that Carter Hart started against Tampa and a 7 spot against Martin Jones in the game against the Avalanche is not going to, you know, do great things for the goaltender's confidence, even though you can't pin those games on them. The Flyers want to correct things defensively and, you know, give these goaltenders a chance to provide the great goaltending that they were at the start of the year.
So there was another coaching change this week. They're trying to steal headlines, I guess, from each other. But Vancouver walked away from their coach and hired Bruce Boudreau. What do you see happening there?
I think Bruce is the right guy for the job because he has a proven track record with talented players, top 6 forwards that have produced while he's been behind the bench. What that formula is, not 100% sure. I never played for Bruce, but I think it's the fact that he really can get his message through to the players in a way that they understand it, a way that alleviates some of the pressure that they may be feeling. And he has done a really good job with a positive attitude of getting players to play to their potential. And Vancouver's got a lot of guys that were not playing to their potential. Players that you enjoy watching play weren't enjoyable to watch play. Elias Pettersson, one of those guys. Brock Besser, another one of those guys. There's enough young guns on that team that Bruce has something to work with. And I think because of that, he's going to get the most out of them. And I think there's going to be a sense of relief there. I think Bruce will get the job done and he'll have fun doing it. And the guys playing for him will have an enjoyable experience as well.
Certainly will have fun doing it. And I was thinking while you were talking, you know, it's funny, both of those teams, it seems, were in the same position, right? They both had unexpectedly good playoff runs that got hopes up high. And it's almost like they were victims of maybe going too deep into the playoffs before they were ready.
It's a great point because there's no question that expectations were elevated. You know, there was a time when Travis Green was the, you know, the next coach in line to be one of the guys that could elevate and become the next, you know, Quenneville, Babcock, all the guys that have won, John Coopers that have been winning Stanley Cups. So there was extra excitement about that also. But whenever you have a good playoff run, it's not only about that run, it's about what you do the next season and the season after that. Tampa has proven that even in playoff disappointments with long runs, you still have to find a way to stay as one of the top teams in the league. Tampa's one of those teams. The Bruins have been consistent playoff performers for years. The Capitals, the Penguins, you know, there's a long list of teams that have sustained those Stanley Cup aspirations because they've been solid teams during the regular season. Sometimes those expectations get ahead of themselves for various reasons, and I think both Vancouver and Philly were kind of victimized by that.
Another team that's in that boat, and you mentioned them a little bit earlier, the New York Islanders. I think they were everybody's pick to at least be in the top 4 this year. They're at the bottom of the standings, not just the division, but the whole league. They're towards the bottom. Is their season salvageable?
It is, because they're, unlike some of the teams we just mentioned, they have done it consistently since Barry Trotz arrived on the island. They've had a lot things out of their control, as have some of these other teams that are, you know, have made coaching changes. But they've done it before. They deserve to be one of the preseason favorites to win the Stanley Cup based upon some of their runs that they've had recently. The fact that they've got a team that's got a solid foundation. It's one of the more shocking things what's happened to the Islanders this year. But they've had a lot of things. I mean, starting on the road for, what, the first 13 games, COVID situations, injuries to key players, and this thing looked like it was going to get away from them. I still give them a chance to climb back in it. Of all the teams that are sitting down, you know, near the bottom that look like their season may be done as far as playoff aspirations, the Islanders are the one team that I still hold hope out for, that they can regroup. They got the win last night and start to get this thing back on track. A lot of teams are not going to be looking at the Islanders like they're going to be an easy 2 points as this season moves along, and that's because the Islanders have a good hockey team.
You know, it's amazing. And I know you do some talk radio, but the fact that there's already more than whispers here in the New York area that, you know, maybe the coach's time has expired on the island is just mind boggling to me.
Yes. Yeah, it hasn't. So they can, you know, they can take a deep breath on that one. And they're in good hands with Barry Trotz. He's got obviously a proven track record. He did win the Stanley Cup with the Capitals, and he's done nothing but great things with the Islanders since he arrived. And he will right this ship. I mean, they will come out of this because he's been there. He's so experienced, and he's never going to lose his locker room. So they will be fine. Rest assured, Islander fans, you guys will be back there, and you will have, you know, some moments this season where you start to believe again.
And they'll have a nice building to do it in. Before I let you go, I got to ask you about the new gig. What's it been like doing stuff for TNT? I know it's similar to your old job, but what's it been like so far?
Yeah, you know what, Sean? It's been really fun. I mean, it's been a great experience. Being, you know, down at ice level has given me, you know, a different perspective. I've worked in situations where I've been upstairs with, in Edzo's position, where I've had somebody like, you know, Steve Coates or Chris Therrien down between the benches. So I have, you know, respect for what that position can bring. I also know, and kind of through experience, what's important and what's not, and when to get in to the broadcast and when to stay out of the way. So I'm hoping that those are things that fans can appreciate. But it's been a really fun experience working with two guys that I've known forever and have great relationships with, and Eddie O and Kenny Albert, and the crew's been awesome as well. So I think we've got off to a, you know, a running start here, and the fact that our entire crew is, you know, pretty experienced and also is familiar with each other has given us a little bit of an added plus in that regard. So far so good, Sean. We're having fun doing it and looking forward to the next game. I know Panger's with Berkey tonight, and Jennifer Botterill will be back on next Wednesday night.
Well, the broadcasts have been great so far, so it shows that you're having fun. I got one quick last question for you before I let you go about your time between the benches. Are the players better at chirping than they were in your playing days?
No, it's a lot less. It's, you know, unless I just haven't caught the right game yet, they're very supportive of one another on their own team, where we had all kinds of conversations, not just with the opposition, but within our own bench and teammates. And they weren't always about, you know, smiles and giggles. I mean, there was a lot of times you were being pushed by a veteran player to do more. You don't see as much of that as I experienced when I played, and there's not nearly as much conversation. And a lot of that probably has to do with, you know, someone like myself standing in between the benches with a headset around my head and a microphone there. So I think that probably has changed some of the verbiage that was taking place back in the day when I was playing.
Well, if you were between the benches for that Toronto-Winnipeg game, you might have got an earful.
Yes. Yeah, I was watching some of that, and that no surprise that things became very heated between those two teams.
Well, hopefully you get a game like that soon. They're always fun, and we really appreciate you taking the time to join us here today. As usual, great stuff.
Thanks a lot, Sean. Have a great day, buddy.
Dan, what a great interview with Keith Jones. We've had him on the podcast a couple of times. I learned something new each time. Does a great job on all his different broadcasts. I was talking with Adam Killman, who's based out of Philly, and Keith's everywhere, right? He does morning radio. He does Flyers games. He does national games. He pretty much lives and breathes hockey, and it shows when you talk to him, just a font of information. So it's great talking to him, but let's circle back into stuff that's happening in the league right now. You covered the game last night remotely, the Chicago and the Rangers in the second half of the back-to-back. Marc-Andre Fleury's going for his 500th win, which is an amazing number. He doesn't get it. The Rangers win, and the train keeps rolling. But let's try and put that in perspective. 500 for a goalie. It's going to come soon.
Well, it could come in his next game. Yeah. First off, did you say it was a great interview with Keith Jones because you did it solo?
Well, that was implied. I'm glad that you inferred that.
Yes, I definitely picked up on that. Anyway, yes, the Blackhawks, Fleury. Put it in perspective, man, Well, two other guys in the history of the game have done this, right? Martin Brodeur, 691, and Patrick Roy, 551. So that's the club that Marc-Andre Fleury is joining. And if you go around and have a debate with people, who's the best goalie ever in the National Hockey League? My guess is you will have Brodeur, Patrick Roy, and probably Dominik Hasek in the argument, right? Well, if Marc-Andre Fleury is joining the 500 win club with Patrick Roy and Martin Brodeur, should he be involved in that argument? He's not the best goalie that's ever played in the National Hockey League. Martin Brodeur has 140 more wins than everybody, and I still think he's the best, right? But Marc-Andre Fleury, with this milestone, and not necessarily that I don't think he necessarily needs the milestone, he is a top five, top 10 goalie of all time, and he's got the numbers to prove it. He's got the rings to prove it. One, he won solo. One, he did a lot of work to help the Pittsburgh Penguins before they went on with Matt Murray to win it. To put it in perspective, you're talking about a Hall of Fame goaltender, without question, a Hall of Fame goaltender. And I do, like, I wonder about Roberto Luongo and Henrik Lundqvist. Do they get in on their first chance into the Hall of Fame? I think both of them are Hall of Famers. Do they get in on their first chance? Probably not, because it's hard for goalies. But now with 500 wins, that significant number, I think that puts Marc-Andre Fleury in on his first shot, whenever that's going to be.
I think a lot of people would rate both of those goalies that you mentioned, Lundqvist and Luongo, ahead of Marc-Andre Fleury, which I personally find shocking. I don't know that there's a player in this league that's played at the elite level that Marc-Andre Fleury's played at from virtually day one that gets less respect than that man. To me, it's unbelievable. Oh, you could have won all those cups in Pittsburgh with Sean playing goal. They had Crosby, they had Letang, they had Malkin, they had this, they had that. They don't win one of those cups without that incredible save he makes against the Detroit Red Wings. Crosby didn't do anything on that. Malkin didn't do anything on that. Letang didn't do anything on that. And it's not a one save thing, but that illustrates his worth. I think, you know, and they attacked at will. And a lot of times left him to kind of hold the fort. They had that confidence in him. He goes to an expansion team, brings them to the Stanley Cup final. Every player on that team was an outcast. They had been deemed excess to needs. And the reason they went to the Stanley Cup final was Marc-Andre Fleury. To me, he's maybe the third best goalie I've ever seen play hockey, like seen with my eyes play hockey. And he does not get that respect at all.
You think about, right? I mean, he was basically run out of Pittsburgh, right? Like basically run out of Pittsburgh, beloved, but run out of Pittsburgh. He was essentially tossed out of Vegas, right? I mean, didn't need you anymore. Same thing with Pittsburgh. Don't need you anymore. After winning the Vezina Trophy, right? Don't need you anymore. Both times, he was better than the goalie that replaced him and still is, all right? And he still is. And that's not a knock on Robin Lehner. Robin Lehner's a very good goaltender. Marc-Andre Fleury is better than Robin Lehner. Matt Murray took over for Pittsburgh, won the Stanley Cups. I get all that. Matt Murray's not even in the National Hockey League right now, right? Now, that's a different argument. That's a different debate with Ottawa and all that stuff, but he's certainly not with the Penguins, right? Both times he was run out of those situations, Marc-Andre Fleury was the better goalie, and he remains to this day better than those goalies that were chosen ahead of him, okay? That's the disrespect that I see. That's the disrespect you're talking about, I think, and even more so, right?
Well, I'm talking more about the fans. I mean, you look at both those moves, and there was a money element to each of them. Both teams kind of backed themselves into a cap corner. Matt Murray was a significantly cheaper option who had won two cups and was younger and was cheaper and everything else that went along with that. And nobody could predict that the descent would be as quick as it was. And then the Golden Knights put themselves in cap hell and had to get out of it. But, you know, all the goalies that you think are in that conversation, and Hank is the only one that stayed with his team. Everybody else, you're talking elite, elite, best of the game goalies, and every team in the NHL at some point said, he's not the best goalie for me, right? Patrick Waugh got traded from Montreal. Marty played his whole career in New Jersey. We'll just write off the last year. That was, I think if everybody could have that back, they would change that. That wasn't a Patrick Waugh prime of his career. Let's move this guy out of here. Dominic Hasek moved all around, right? Luongo didn't play his whole career. Even when he was elite, he got moved. So I think part of it's the position and just an underappreciation. I want to say you'd see more goalies stay for their whole careers, but the salary cap has such a big part of it. But speaking of goalies, before we go, speaking of goalies staying for their whole career, there's two points I want to make. It's been a great week, if you love goalies, to see guys find their dream and realize their dream, because we've had to address a lot of e-bugs this week, emergency backup goaltenders. And you know, these are guys that have full-time jobs and play for the love of the game. The guy in Dallas, like, came off his construction job to practice with the Columbus Blue Jackets because they didn't have a healthy goalie. The guy in Tampa, you know, he paints goalie masks. Good Rhode Island boy, by the way. Goes out for the warm-ups, no helmet, shooting pucks into the net like he owns the NHL. It was awesome. But what I really wanted to talk to you about is goalie staying for their whole career. The biggest e-bug of them all shows up this week. And it's Tuukka Rask in Boston. They don't have a healthy goalie because Ullmark's sick. And they need somebody for practice. And Tuukka's working out at Warrior, and he's getting ready to possibly come back. And they say, hey, Tuukka, you want to practice? And he's like, sure. And all of a sudden, Boston is on fire. Here comes Tuukka. He's coming back. None of that's been decided yet. If he comes back, he's coming back to Boston, and then he'll finish his career in Boston, which I think is the right thing for everyone involved. But what a great story that was this week.
It was great. And then I think it was Brad Marchand was like, can't score on a goalie in practice. What's going on? We can't score on the e-bug in practice. No. And look, there's some full circle here, right? So before we, like, Rask, he's going to be with the Bruins if he wants to play, right? There's no question about it. They need it too, right? They need it. But if Tuukka Rask decides he doesn't want to play, or if Tuukka Rask sustains another injury while working out, you know who could be with the Bruins? Marc-Andre Fleury, right? He could be. Because once again, Marc-Andre Fleury, I mean, if the Blackhawks are smart here and they're not a playoff team, why would they keep him unless they're going to re-sign him, you know? They're going to move him. He's got 1 year. He's in the last year of his deal. And another time, Marc-Andre Fleury could get moved. But this time, you know, I mean, it actually makes a little bit of sense, you know, from a team standpoint. You know, we go back to Fleury. Like, Vegas didn't have to get Robin Lehner. They did. They got greedy. They went out and got Robin Lehner. They created that situation for them. The cap situation with Pittsburgh was there. We understand that. But Marc-Andre Fleury could get moved again. And I'm just tossing this out there. I have no knowledge of this anyway, but if Tuukka doesn't want to come back, they're going to be in the market for a veteran goaltender who's been there and done that. That guy's Marc-Andre Fleury. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens with him this season. And beyond that, and I addressed this in the mailbag, what happens with the Blackhawks? Because they have an interim coach and they have an interim general manager, and they don't seem to be in a rush to make any move here to change that. And nor do I think they should be. You got to wait it out, see what you got. But they could be a team that makes some changes in the offseason or before and goes a different path. And then we've seen the Blackhawks been going in a while into a rebuild. If so, you know, so that's a lot to consider there for Chicago. But strictly with Marc-Andre Fleury, I'd be shocked if he finishes the season with Chicago. And it wouldn't shock me at all if Tuukka doesn't come back that he ends up in Boston.
Dan, before the Blackhawks ran into the juggernaut that is the New York Rangers.
And Ranger fans, you hear that, right? Ranger fans are hearing you, I think.
Bob Bender's going to put that clip on Twitter to try and save me. But they ran into the juggernaut that is the Rangers, the Blackhawks had found their way.
They were
playing 667 hockey before these two losses. They're playing a completely different game. They're starting to get their confidence back. Marc-Andre Fleury's been really good. Their big players have been better. They're 9 points out of a playoff spot. I don't think they're done by any stretch of the imagination, and they may not be making any moves.
It's possible. It's possible, but they couldn't beat the Rangers who haven't played anybody, you know?
Yes. So I think we've come out neutral on that argument, and I don't believe it's an argument that can ever be won. No. But I won every other argument that we had today, so it was a good podcast. And before I finally take an L, we should probably wrap it up.
We should definitely wrap it up. We're going to give you the win on this one because you did the solo interview with Keith Jones. So I'll give you that. And it was a terrific job on your part. So we'll give you that. So we'll give you the W for the podcast. And Sean, we'll be back next week where we will share the interview for whoever our guest is going to be so we can get back to neutral on that as well. And until then, everybody, and just enjoy the hockey.